Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
If you're not happy in the U.S., if you're complaining all the time, very simply, you can leave. You can leave right now.
This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now.
Happening right now, House Democrats have voted in favor of a resolution to reprimand President Trump for comments about four congresswomen of color. That rhetoric has ratcheted up significantly over the past several days. Democrats are angry. Republicans are soft-pedaling the issue.
We all know politics is a contact sport. It's about time we lowered the temperature all across the board.
Well, the president's not a racist. The president's not a racist. And I think the tone of all of this is not good for the country. But it's coming from all different ideological points of view. That's the point.
That, of course, is Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell today. We are talking about all of this tonight, and we're asking our listeners, are race relations getting worse in America? My guests tonight are Joya Jefferson Nuri. She is a political communication strategist, and also Justin Hansford. He is the executive director of the Thurgood Marshall Civil Rights Center right here at the Howard University School of Law. What do you think? Is America becoming more racist? What is the state of race in this great country of ours? Give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Thank you all for coming. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Joya, let's talk about this. Okay, the House has voted to reprimand the president. Obviously, this is not a legal or binding issue. It is symbolic. This happening just minutes ago. Your thoughts about that?
I want to back the story up just a little bit.
Back it up.
We keep thinking that racism is something that goes and comes and goes away and comes back in the United States. It never goes away. It always has an ugly face. And the fact that Donald Trump says this is exactly the same history we have had. If this, we want to condemn him, maybe he's a racist, maybe he isn't, it's non-binding, we might as well have just thrown him an ice cream cone. We're not doing anything. The question isn't whether or not he's a racist or whether or not we've had a racist history. The question is, what are we going to do about it?
Yeah. So, what do you think?
I think right now we're not doing anything.
There you go.
Because I think if the conversation is he a racist or isn't he a racist, it's just an absolute waste of time. Like, well, you know, was George Wallace a racist? Well, maybe he was just doing his states' rights thing. He was a racist. Mm-hmm. And I think the backing away from the word racist doesn't allow us the opportunity to actually talk about what race is in America. And it hasn't. It's changed in what it looks like, but it actually hasn't. Jason, what do you think? I mean,
but right. Justin, here's the thing, though. On the issue of whether or not the president tweets about these four congresswomen of color telling them to go back where they came from, depending on the color of the glasses that these comments are viewed through often determines whether or not you think these are racist, whether you view them through a Republican-covered glasses, Democratic-covered glasses, white-colored glasses, black-colored glasses, brown-colored glasses. No one's seeing the same thing.
Right. I think it's difficult to honestly listen to those comments and not agree that they are racially tinged. I think if you think about this idea of go back where you came from, mm-hmm. That's a very old trope in American society that uses race as a divider, separating people who belong as citizens and people who don't belong as people who don't belong here. And it should be said that many people who have come here from other countries are fleeing situations where they didn't have a choice and they were hoping for a way to be safe.
But, you know, three of these four were born here.
Exactly. So three or four of them, you know, if they go back to where they come from, they're still in the United States.
Right.
But I do think it says a lot about our society today. And it's an interesting moment because we are at a time where reparations is being discussed in the halls of Congress. We are at a time where we have a black woman, a Howard graduate, who's running for president. We are in a time where we do have a discourse on race that is happening. And to have these same tired racist tropes coming from the White House is a particularly interesting contradiction. I agree with you that it's not something new to have racism coming from the White House. So before the previous president, we had President Bush with Katrina. Before that, we had President Clinton with super predators. We had Papa Bush talking about Willie Horton. You had Reagan talking about
Andrew Jackson.
Yeah,
you go, we had exactly, Andrew George Washington. Johnson. We had George Washington.
We had 12 presidents who were slave
holders. Yeah, but hold on.
Right,
but
not new.
It may not be new, but let's keep this contemporary. Because we do know what was happening during those 400 years in America. We're talking about now. Where we have elected a president who has, you say, racially tinged. Some people will say race baiting. Some people will say racist. Because I know that, even as a journalist doing this for 35 years, I've had, white people in Alabama yell at me talking about go back to where you came from.
Mm-hmm.
And all I'm trying to do is stick a microphone in your face and get a comment. And so, let us be clear that is what is happening now. Are we moving backwards instead of forwards when it comes to race? Is the president responsible for that, or is he only responsible for opening up this Pandora's box that everyone has been looking at for the past 60 or 70 years?
Well, what I think is an interesting question is we are so partisan today. As we saw in this vote in Congress, almost all of the Republican senators, or excuse me, congresspeople, voted against this resolution. So should we conclude that all of them agree with his comments, or all of them would veer towards the racist position? And it's a difficult question to answer because they have to line up with the president no matter what he says. I was saying in the room in the back, if President Trump came to the White House with a white hood on,
mm-hmm.
many of these congresspeople and senators would have a difficult time calling him racist. If he had a Ku Klux Klan outfit on in the White House, they still would have a difficult time calling him racist. Because they're so locked into partisan positions that people who otherwise might be on the fence are, I believe, some of them are being pushed farther into the racial hole than maybe they would be without a President Trump's presence. And one more thing I want to add is the term racist, I have a hard time using that because it's so misunderstood. There are so many people who will say, well, it's not a racist statement unless he uses a racial slur. But we know that so many racist things have happened in America without the use of racial slurs or without the use of racial descriptors at all. Think about poll taxes, which were racist policies that never even mentioned a person's race.
Redlining, talking about mortgages,
yep.
and or even real estate agents who may say to you, you don't want to live over
right.
there.
Or the need for affirmative action.
Exactly.
Were not racial. It was the law doesn't even say black or white. It says
exactly.
Minorities or cultural, economic minorities. It can go either way.
And mass incarceration, the crack mm-hmm. cocaine versus right. powder cocaine disparity. So we have so many of these policies that are some of the most racist policies that we've experienced in our lifetime that never used a racial slur. So mm-hmm. we should forget about this idea that racial slurs are somehow a necessity in order Absolutely. To call something a racist statement.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about race relations in America. Are they getting worse? What do you think? I want to hear from you. Martin, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Martin. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I mean, the country is definitely more racist. It started, of course, or got worse when Trump entered the election to become president. One big reason he is president is because he had nothing but massive support from racist people. And we're allowing him to get away with this. The funny thing is, the longer we allow him to do this, if you look at him when he's on TV, he has such a sinister look now. This guy is a master. And that's basically my comment.
Martin, thank you so much. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Wendell, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. Go right ahead.
Oh, good, good. This administration is all about division, man. We're looking at this, and somebody made a comment back 60 years. He's turned the clock back 60 years. All they're practicing is institutional racism, okay? You're talking about racial policies, racial politics, and things are going on. Talk about the socioeconomic conditions in America. People of color, what, at the bottom of the list, right? Then you're talking about this guy wants to be a dictator. He's idolizing what he's seen around the world as a dictator. His base is completely racist. As the guy said before, look at all the people that were involved in him coming to the forefront to get him elected, his donations and everything, what he says. Look at the Republicans, the good old boys. With this comment going on, nobody has anything to say. I know everybody's been watching them, putting them on the news, and putting them on the microphone. They can't say anything. It's the grand twist. Oh, he didn't mean that. Let's keep it for real. The problem in America with him is they continue to talk. We need action with this man. He's not going to stop. And his base is going to continue to grow, and because this is what they want to do. He wants to be a dictator, and all of them turning their back, we're getting no progress in here. He needs to go. But the question is, he's a good old boy. Somebody said if he put on a sheet and walked into the White House, they would just surround him, put on theirs too. Because let's keep it real. This country is going back worse than ever. Make America great again. They want to take it back to what? Slavery. Think about one thing the books always say. And when the old South will rise again, is that not the topic they kept using?
Okay.
Why are we still having problems with the Confederate flag? What did you get for second place? They should have been gone. That's over 150 years ago. This is a problem, and we need to address it, not just us talking on here. They need to do what they're getting paid to do.
Well, and Wendell, thank you so much. I appreciate your comment. But before you respond to that, Justin, one of the things that we also need to mark, and that 5 years ago, tomorrow, Eric Garner was killed.
That's right.
On the streets of Staten Island. And the administration, the Attorney General, Bill Barr, was behind this decision today not to press civil rights violation charges against Daniel Pantaleo, the officer who had this chokehold on him. This has been going on for 5 years, and I would think that a lot of people were really surprised that this is why I say a lot of people I think were surprised because the Attorney General under President Obama,
Eric Holder.
No, not Holder, the sister, whose name just escapes me at the moment.
Oh, yes. She met with Clinton on the tarmac.
Yes, exactly. We're going to get that. But she wanted to do this. She wanted to do it, but I would argue that the time ran out. And, you know, some critics have also argued that the time ran out for her as well. The only thing that's really left is Pantaleo losing his job.
Right. Can I say, so Loretta Lynch was her name.
Yes. Thank you so much.
The problem there, of course, is it's a question of what the law is. And so it shouldn't, in theory, be a question of who is in office.
It shouldn't be.
We're talking about prosecution of a possible crime where all of us saw the action take place on video. It shouldn't be a question of whether or not a particular individual is in office. It should be a question of whether you're going to uphold what we all know is right and just. But when it comes to the federal law around police excessive force, Eric Holder, the first Attorney General under President Obama, made a statement where he criticized the excessive force laws in the United States for being too difficult to use against police officers because you have this requirement that you prove intent, meaning that you have to prove that they were intentionally trying to break this law.
Right.
And it's almost an impossible standard to meet. But one thing I wanted to say also, going back to the political point, today there are people in America who are in a position to defend President Trump and who feel that it was the right decision not to bring charges against Officer Pantaleo. Some of these people do not consider themselves racist. Most of them probably don't consider themselves racist. Most of them probably don't think about race on a day-to-day basis. Most of them think that they're neutral. But there's no such thing as being neutral on these issues. People who are completely unaware of their deep-seated positions and who get pushed for partisan reasons to defend the police at all times, to defend President Trump at all times, I believe in our current climate will become more deeply ingrained in sort of picking sides. Like you have to pick a team.
I totally agree that there are people who believe in police power and who do not consider themselves racist, who believe that a crime is a crime and the police are here to protect us and protect our property. I totally agree with that. And you would ask them, they would not be a racist. There may not be any other decision they make in their lives that you would consider racist. My question always back to people like that is, if Eric Garner had been arrested for selling a single cigarette, was there a possibility we would have executed him?
Mm-hmm.
No.
That's right.
It's not a capital crime. So from Mike Brown to Eric Garner, the crimes that are being committed, and yes, they're crimes by the law. I'm not arguing that. But would they be capital crimes? So for an officer to kill somebody for committing a crime that is not a capital crime is a crime.
Mm-hmm.
You just executed somebody the state would never under any circumstances execute. And that's always my response back.
Yeah.
And so the officer's wrong. He committed a crime by executing somebody for a petty crime.
Mm. Well, you know, I need to take a break. But if you're on the phone, Ms. Parker calling from Virginia, we're going to talk to you next. Also, Robert calling from Annapolis. You are also on deck to be part of this conversation. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about racism in America. Is it worse now than perhaps ever before? What do you think? Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM Channel 141. And we are still taking your phone calls at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Stay with us.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about racism, the president, and what is next for America. My guests are Joya Jefferson Nuri. She is a political communication strategist, and Justin Hansford, executive director of the Thurgood Marshall Civil Rights Center here at the Howard University School of Law. What do you think? Where are we when it comes to racism? Not race, but racism in America. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Robert, calling from Annapolis. Thanks for calling, Robert. What's on your mind?
Hello.
Hey, go right ahead.
How we doing, everybody?
We're doing fine. Go right ahead. A lot of folks on the line, Robert.
Good, good, good. I just want to give you guys some quick background. I'm a 30-year-old male. I've been living in Annapolis for about 3 years, moved down from New Jersey. My skin tone is very, very, very dark. So when I say what I'm about to say, nobody think that I'm crazy or anything like that. As far as racism in America, it definitely exists. But I think the problem is not the fact that racism exists. I think the problem is the fact that we as a people as a whole have not sent the right message to make sure that it goes away. And what I mean by that is the fact that I started my own business probably a year ago. I've been doing well, predominantly because of the way that the new tax laws are set up for business owners in America these days.
But what is now, Robert? I got a lot of folks on the line. I need you to truncate this and tell us what's the message that you think that people of color need to send, and to whom?
That we need to send it to ourselves. There's not enough of us perpetuating what we need to do, as opposed to crying about racism. Let's pick everybody up by the bootstraps and just say, this is what you need to do. Here's how you get a business started, or here's how you can become financially wealthy and not have to worry about what's going on. Because I promise you, if we have better opportunities as a whole, the idea of racism and being quote unquote held down goes away substantially, I guarantee you.
Here's my problem with that, Robert, before I let you go. That would be all fine, well, and good, but you can't tell that to LeBron James, because he has pulled himself up by his bootstraps from those difficult communities in Cleveland. And you remember a couple of years ago, he had the N-word spray painted on his door. Well, I don't know what kind of wrong LeBron James was doing and the messages that he was sending. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, you know, unfortunately, I think that those racist feelings are so ingrained, not only in the history and the culture, and thank goodness for the successful Roberts of the world, dark skin or otherwise, New Jersey or Annapolis.
And bootstraps.
Right. And bootstraps.
Trump is going after four members of Congress.
Right, right.
I mean, you're like, how much more achieved can you be?
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
Right. No, but particularly when you are talking about a Somali refugee,
mm-hmm. right.
who came to this country,
right.
Because where she came from was so dangerous, and
right.
you want to talk about bootstraps?
Exactly,
she's
and
it.
But you know, I will say that this idea—I'm going to call it a meme.
Mm-hmm.
This meme of pull yourself up by your bootstraps and it's your own fault and stop crying. This is an ongoing meme to create this idea of self-blame. So they want people to look at themselves
Good
and say,
point.
It's really our fault. We shouldn't be upset. We shouldn't strive for structural changes. We should focus on ourselves and blame ourselves. It lowers our self-esteem. People self-medicate with drugs. People are in structures. Think of Eric Garner, somebody who's trying his best to make a living in an economy that was failing him. And he's trying to sell these Lucy's, trying to make ends meet. And he meets this fate because he's trying to pull himself up by his bootstraps, so to speak. So I think this idea that we should blame ourselves as opposed to looking at society and structures and trying to create larger societal change is a big problem in our community. And it's one of the things that's holding us back on this idea of racism.
Exactly.
Back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ms. Parker, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, there's a lot on my mind. First and foremost, I am so tired of all of this talk. We know what it is. Everyone across the nation knows what it is. It's racism. What to do? This man is slapping every minority, as he puts it, in the face. It's so obvious. And we have to send the right message, like I think Robert stated. This is mind-boggling. Unbelievable. I mean, for him to be allowed to continue as our leader doing the crazy crap, and no one, I mean, the people who can make a difference, you need to. But you know why they're not? They're sitting back silent because they're part of it. It is a society.
Yeah.
It is truly a society.
Well, thank you, Ms. Parker. Thank you for your comments. One of the things she kind of touched on, something I thought was really interesting. I would argue that if you want to blame black and brown folks for anything, I would argue that for the folks that are sick and tired of it, there are some folks that are sick and tired of it now who weren't sick and tired of it in 2016 when it was time to vote.
I knew you were going to say that.
Of course I'm going to say that. Of course I'm going to say
I was just telling somebody the other day the difference between how communities are treated in major cities is based on who votes and who makes political contributions. That's not how our democracy was set up, but hey, it's the reality. And when we voted in the South in the 60s, Bull Connor lost his job.
Mm-hmm.
When we vote as a mass, we don't have to vote for the same person. But when we vote, we can have I'm not saying that's the end all and be all. Please don't. I'm not naive enough to think if we vote, because we voted for Obama, then we didn't. And I don't know what we got out of Obama. A lot. But maybe not what we thought. But so I'm not saying it's the end all and be all. But it's the one thing we can do that so often we elect not to do, and not just presidential elections, but in governor races and congressional races.
Well, and let's talk about that, because when you talk about Obama, you got to remember, you know, what Obama said during that, you know, that first midterm. He said, "Yeah, we got to, what did he call it, a pasting," and so you know, everybody, you know, after they voted for him,
they went home,
right?
And they
right.
forgot about Congress.
Right.
We will never
gubernatorial
know.
Races.
Yeah, we're not right. going to know what Obama may have been able to accomplish if his party, the Democrats, had both houses. But
exactly.
we do know what happened as a result of him, a Democrat, being in the White House and not having control, the Democrats not having control of both houses
right.
of Congress.
And I definitely agree with this idea that political power is where it's at. It's a big mistake to think that you can be apolitical.
Yes.
I just want to further the conversation by saying there are more ways to be political than just voting.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many people who may hear this program who have political representatives who are either silent on what's happening or they're not loud enough. And so you have the ability to exercise political power when elections are not taking place by reaching out to your representatives, by using all of your resources in your community, whether you're the part of an organization that has political power. Oftentimes we gain political power by working in community. So whatever organizations that you have that can speak to representatives, that can speak to political power holders where you live, leverage those. Make sure people know that you're upset about this and you're not going to be willing to just stay silent. For people to allow these things to take place and for us not to send the message through the mechanism of our political power is a mistake. So
it's
I agree
a big
with that.
Mistake. And I know we know through history that the only thing the United States government is afraid of it is its own people. Mm. It will shift.
What do you mean
when
by
we
that?
Shift.
What do you mean by that?
I think that if you look at the success of all the movements that we're happy about, okay, the people of this country petitioned the government to do something different. And the government will yield. It may take two generations, but it happens. If you look at just the success of African descendant people and what we've done from where we first got here, from the Middle Passage to today, we have a long way to go, but we have a government that will yield. The government mm-hmm. that will yield. And the people in China who would wish enough protest in the street would get their government to yield, enough vote would get them to yield. And I don't want to wave a flag here, but we actually do have a democracy that will respond to the petitions of its people.
Let me go back.
Maybe
to
not the, fast enough.
Let me go back to
will.
The phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Anthony calling from Bethesda. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Hey, good evening, guys. This is Anthony. How are you guys doing?
Doing just fine. Go right ahead.
So a couple of things I want to try to get in real quick. I know you got a lot of people holding. So what I'm about to say may seem a little bit bold or controversial, but I feel like a lot of our people, meaning black people, are still suffering subconsciously, if you will, from what I guess what I call a white savior mentality, where they're looking for someone to come save them, whether they be in political office, whether they be in a local political office, or just some type of power influence, where subconsciously they're calling out for these people to speak up, you know. And even when I listen to your panel, they say, well, why aren't these individuals speaking up against Trump? Why aren't they saying anything? Because when we as a people stand up and say, well, no, that was brutality, or that was racist, or that was, you know, xenophobic, whatever it may be, we already know the outcome. We already have a long history of knowing what the answer will be. They will allow us to speak and do radio talk shows, everything about that, write letters, but we still almost hypocritically call for some type of action after we have this discussion or after we make these call outs.
What's but your next really, point, Anthony? I'm going to let you make your second point. Go ahead, good. Real quick,
so
please.
So the second point is just from KRS-One, one of the greatest hip-hop artists of all time. He lists the different types of races, where there's the racist that's unconscious of his racism, meaning that they don't even know that they're racist. They say, I'm not a bigot, I'm not a racist, and they won't admit it, meaning they won't even help out or allow themselves to get in the way of whatever our fight is. And then there's that racist that says, well, I was brought up this way, and they're just pretty much adhering to what their parents taught them. But also there's that economic racism that says, well, I'm going to withhold certain funding or certain business opportunities from these people. But also, lastly, there's also that racism that says, well, you know what? Excuse me. I'm going to go ahead and make sure that the people, no matter how civilized or whatever they may be, because I have the power, I'm going to create these laws intentionally to keep them behind, but also keep them dependent, looking for that savior, if you will.
Okay.
So again, the discussion needs to be more about action, but I don't think we can get to that point until we snap out, if you will, of that subconscious of looking or desire to be saved.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Anybody have any thoughts about what Anthony was just sharing?
Well, one thing that I think is interesting is there is this idea that we have to do something. We cannot wait on the government, whether it's the legal system, in the case of Eric Garner, whether it's the federal government, when it comes to this sanction that's being voted on against President Trump. We can't wait for them to do all of the work on our behalf. And I agree with that. I think we have to leverage our political power. So in New York, for example, there's still the possibility that that officer could be fired by the mayor. Black people in the city of New York are organizing, along with the mother of Eric Garner, to try to enforce that level of accountability. Mm-hmm. And so that's a use of political power, because that mayor in that city depends on black people in Brooklyn and Harlem.
Staten Island.
And so those people have to be able to leverage their political power to force accountability. The same thing applies whether it's Washington, D.C., whether it's Philadelphia, wherever you are. If you have political power, use it to make sure that the politicians keep the pressure on police officers who engage in excessive force and police brutality.
I would say that there's another culprit here.
Who's that? Or
I would say that is the media. I think we depend on our storytelling entirely too often in the media. So when CNN leaves town, we think it's not happening. Those protests in New York, the Eric Garner's mother, have all been very, very active. They may not be making the headlines, but if you're actually looking for the information, this campaign for Eric Garner and probably 7 or 8 other black men continues on. They're still petitioning legislatures. They're still petitioning the politicians there. These movements keep going. We know this. It keeps going. But in 24 hours, the people who have been given the fourth estate, that has been given the power to keep an informed electorate, decide that there's 5 stories that they're going to cover. When there are millions of stories to be covered, you think in 24 hours, you wouldn't have to have one show after another talking about the exact same thing. And so what this brother is seeing, he thinks that we're not petitioning and we're not doing our work in the streets, but we are. He's just unaware of it.
Yeah,
I don't think we all go home because Eric Garner's dead now. We stay in the streets.
And on the thing of the white savior piece, I'm not fully clear on that, but I will say that you can look at, you know, the coverage. When there is so much discussion about, the president said this, and members of his party that are predominantly white,
mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Capitol Hill representation. The expectation is, right or wrong, that these people are good people. And that they would be able
Congress?
To...
Congress?
Yeah, well,
I'm talking...
Hold on.
Let me make my point.
Okay.
Because if you think they're not good people, then don't get mad when they don't say anything. Mm. But see, that's the thing. You get mad. You say, well, why aren't the Republicans saying something? Well, if you don't think that they are good people and that they would see the truth and they would see racism... in black and white.
If you actually believe that, you didn't take eighth grade history.
Don't miss my point.
Okay.
I'm talking about people.
Okay.
As human beings.
Right.
Who happen to be Republicans. And if you get mad because they haven't said anything, then you have an anticipation, or an expectation that they are looking at these issues as human beings.
Right.
And that's why people get mad. People stop getting mad, like the Joy A. Jefferson Nuries of the world, where you say, they ain't gonna say nothing.
Right.
Yeah. It's like,
So she's what, not mad. What's
the, no, I'm not mad.
Right, you're not mad.
I don't understand what the conversation was about in the first place.
Well, I'll say this, though. It is true that these are the people that hold the levers of power in our society.
Right.
And so I don't think, I want to be clear, I'm not agreeing that there's an idea that we're looking for a white savior. We're acknowledging
that
this is the most powerful office in the country.
Mm-hmm.
These are the most powerful people in our world. Police officers
mandated by the Constitution.
Exactly. Police officers have the ability to use force and even take our lives under the law. So we have to respond to their decisions.
But I'm not just talking about police. Lives. I'm talking about racist statements.
Because President Trump, he controls ICE, this executive branch. He controls law enforcement in this country. The federal government, the federal prosecutor who decided not to bring charges, that's a Donald Trump appointee, Bill Barr. So all of this trickles down from the president to the federal prosecutors, to the ability for law enforcement officers to take people's lives and not be held accountable.
And what you're saying about, do we see them as humans and do we expect that they would see these issues as human beings?
I think we knew as issues of humanity.
If we didn't know before.
Yeah, right.
If we didn't know before, just in modern history, because, you know, I like to connect all history together. I don't think anything is isolated. But just for modern history, the fact that Trayvon Martin's killer was let go was those women on that jury could not see Trayvon Martin as their own child.
That's my point.
They will not see you as a human being. I'm not saying every white person, please don't get me that impression.
Yeah.
But I think that there's a large portion that do not identify with a mother's pain when that child dead is black.
And what I'm saying is there was the expectation by black people. When you're talking about the Trayvon, don't you see what has happened to this child? He was minding his own business. Why do you see, and he
was an 11-year-old clean killed. It was so clear to us.
That's my point.
Right.
And that is where, you know, and I think we have gotten to a point now where if a black man, an armed black man is killed by a police officer, if the president makes a statement that is racist, if you know, someone is you know, attacked on the street and minding their own business, that you would think that, you know, I think we've gotten to the point now where, well, yeah, I guess I'm
so
I just can't expect any humanity.
Maybe the question isn't the state of racism in America. Maybe it's the state of human. Maybe it's the state of human. Okay. All right. I won't. Okay.
You try to slide in.
I'm just trying to expand the conversation.
Go ahead.
I'm just trying to expand the conversation. Maybe it's a conversation about being a human and being able to connect with being a human, of having a kinship. With the other people God put you on this planet with, no matter what their color is. So I think that if we actually got past that, we'd realize that most people just want to be able to pay their bills.
Can somebody send Donald Trump a James Baldwin book?
James Baldwin.
Because we've been talking about this for a long time in this country, about how this is a question
but would he
of
read
humanity.
It? I can send it in the morning. Yeah. The question is, would he read it?
Right. Let me get back to the phone lines. They've been waiting patiently. Judith calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Judith. What's on your mind?
First thing that's on my mind is that in the United States of America, okay, Donald Trump has been hired to work for fossil fuels, for the gun industry, from pistols to missiles. Now, we take an old Deep South tactic. We get the white folks to blame everybody else for why they ain't doing good. Those are the ones that aren't rich. I didn't vote for Obama because he was going to be the first black president. I voted for him so he could help change the conditions for the 99% of working people in this country. Because if he did that, it would help the brown and the black people. Because there are more of us poor and in the working class than rich. So the bottom line is, all of this is doing two things. As Representative Pelosi said, number one, it is keeping those who blame people of color for what their status is in America fired up and hating people of color. And it is hiding the fact that we have climate change, we have rampant gun problems. The immigration problem is because we're so busy in Central America, Asia, and everywhere else causing wars that then come back to haunt us. Okay. Just like colonialism.
She should run for office. She's
preaching on you. Yeah.
Well, there you go. You should run for office.
Well, Judith, thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Let's go to Leonard calling from – where are you calling from, Leonard?
Humble, Texas.
Okay. Go right ahead. What's on your mind?
Right to George Bush Airport. Well, first of all, I am an immigrant. I came to this country to better myself.
Okay.
I was able to have a shop in Humble, Texas for 29 years. I am a black man. And the reason why I end up, that drive me towards to open the shop is because of the racism I face in the employment industry. However, Donald Trump father from Germany.
Yeah.
Donald Trump father is not haven't been here for generation.
Okay, so what's your point about that?
My point about I'm asking everyone out there to vote. Go to the ballot box and vote. Let your voice be heard at the ballot box. And you cannot tell someone that doesn't have a boot to pull themselves up by their bootstrap.
Leonard, another one should run for office.
Right. There you go. Leonard, thank you so much for your input. And look, good luck down there in Texas. Because they are, you know, they're chasing immigrants down there.
I know.
Yeah. You know,
I know.
So,
they're rounding you up.
Brown people. You know, let's hope that Leonard gave us a fake name because we don't want them knocking on a black businessman's
and
door.
And hopefully,
asking
that's not
for
the reason
papers.
He's at the airport.
Right, exactly. trying to make an escape. You know, look, I think outside of the voting piece, I think, you know, Justin, you did make a good point. But I think that is voting going to help address racism? Or is this just going to shift power? And so the folks that are, you know, the black folks that are mad now at the people that are supporting the president, are they, when they get mad enough and those that are progressive or independent and they just don't like the president, then we're going to shift again. And then you're going to have conservative, you know, white folks mad at the progressives, independents and black folks and brown folks. Mm. Voting and political power is one thing, but how do you change the status of racism, you know, in this country?
I'm a critical race theorist, so I study under someone named Derek Bell. He passed away, but he's a longtime Harvard Law professor.
Yes.
And his theory was that racism is permanent in American society.
Mm-hmm.
And his theory was that it's permanent in the sense that there's a necessity for an underclass so that there would be a scapegoat. As Judith said a little bit earlier, they need someone to blame. If they don't have a job, they don't look to themselves and say, I should have pulled myself up by my bootstraps. They say, this immigrant is taking my job. And so without that scapegoat, the people who control those jobs would have a lot to answer for in this economy. So I think ultimately we will have to change that dynamic before we can say that racism will be ended. We have to be able to shift those economic and political dynamics that allow for scapegoating to become the easy answer. I think a lot of people in my generation, millennials, we voted for Obama. We had the first African-American president. And here we are in 2019 facing what we're facing. So there's not going to be an overwhelming amount of hope and enthusiasm for just going to the polls and thinking that that's going to be enough. I think we have to have more in-depth conversations about how we shift fundamental dynamics. And honestly, that's why politics around democratic socialism, Bernie, AOC, all these different large discussions around new economic approaches, those things are very attractive to millennials that are looking for something new.
I think that you're absolutely right. I think Derek Bell hit the nail on the head.
Mm-hmm.
That racism is a permanent part of our structure. The demeaning of people who are not white is a permanent part of our psyche. Mm. And the effect on black people is vast. But I think that I will support what you were saying about political and economic power. We may not ever be able to change the overall society's attitudes about us, but if we can have some control over our conditions, if we can have some control over our conditions, and that does start with education, not just reading and writing, but knowing our history and not repeating it, and understanding the connection between Trayvon Martin and Emmett Till and before that, to know those connections.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think public school systems quite make that case.
Mm.
We learn about now, and we don't learn about the future. We know about Spike Lee, but we don't know about Michelle.
Mm.
And so if we can control our conditions, we can survive the racism better.
Well, and I think to your point about history, and I remember there was a couple of weeks ago, there was a story, I believe it was a principal in Florida who lost his job because he was dancing around the Holocaust denying thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, when we talk about that in 20th century history, you know, with the elimination or the defeat, I should say, of Adolf Hitler and the Nazis and everything else, there was a sweeping movement by the political powers in Germany. You know, no Nazi flags. I mean, they came down hard.
Right.
After the Civil War, that didn't happen here.
That's because Lincoln died.
Yeah, exactly.
And Andrew Johnson wasn't about that.
Exactly.
Right.
And I think you compare those two situations, the African-American Holocaust,
mm-hmm.
and what happened after World War II. What would have happened, we can only guess, if Lincoln had not died. And after the Civil War, the hammer kind of came down and said, we will not tolerate these kinds of things. We can only speculate. Mm-hmm. But I think that our history is our history. And the unfortunate thing
is... But I think in the 60s, we had a moment, the 70s, where we said, we're not going to tolerate this.
Yeah,
but we didn't actually erase racism by doing that.
But we didn't get the
education
piece. We
just stopped people from talking about it.
We didn't get the
education. We didn't get the education piece. No, we didn't.
We got it.
Right.
They didn't get it.
Right, right.
And that is where the rub is. Look, I want to thank both of you all for coming in and talking to us, Joya Jefferson-Uri and Justin Hansford. I appreciate it. Always good to talk to big brain people.
That is the Daily
Drum. As we
drum.
Laugh.
Yes. Keep on smiling. You're that right. is the Daily Drum. Okay. SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, July 16th. I'm Harold Fisher. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.
The Howard University.